Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to Astro Q&A with Hope Decay. Okay, it's time for more questions. And the first question, naturally, after bringing up Chinese astrology in the last episode, is... What's more accurate, Vedic or Western astrology? Well, they're both basically the same, at least at the roots. The difference is that Vedic astrology has very much retained its classical foundations, while Western astrology has constantly, you know, changed to develop new theories, new techniques. So that's actually why I prefer Vedic astrology, really, because, you know, I think that the ancient knowledge of astrology is really the most beautiful and symmetrical and rational and perfect. So I prefer the system that's more in touch with its roots. Now, Vedic astrology also elaborates on the basics, but they do it without abandoning the classical foundation. Particularly, their most important elaborations are mathematical. They developed these really, really, really useful mathematical techniques for assessing positivity and especially the relative strength of each and every planet in the chart. These two bits of information, the positivity of a planet and its strength, are absolutely essential for being able to give a confident interpretation of any planet. There is a drawback to Vedic astrology, though. It's that for the past several centuries, they've insisted that the zodiac should be measured with stellar coordinates, sidereal coordinates. Even though their Sanskrit texts like Surya Siddhanta, you know, clearly say that the zodiac is tropical, anchored to equinoxes and solstices. So what I personally do, the astrology that I personally practice, is the classical Vedic astrology, leveraging all the classical foundations and all the amazing mathematical contributions. But I'm also classical in accepting the zodiac as tropical. So that means that everybody's going to hate me. The Western people are going to say, well, you're not a Western astrologer. And the Vedic guys are going to say, oh, you're not a Vedic astrologer, you use tropical. But that's just the way I am. Everybody hates me. Next question is, how come I can't stand Geminis? Okay, well, I would suggest look at the Mercury in your chart. Look at it carefully. I bet that there's something about it. It's damaged in some way or it's negative in some way. And that would indicate that you're just not comfortable with Mercury's traits. You know, Mercury's traits come through very strongly in Gemini. So if you're uncomfortable with Gemini, you probably have a problem with Mercury. Also, you would probably want to look at the air signs in your chart. Since Gemini is an air sign, they might be occupied by or they may be strongly aspected by some really negative planet or planets. How do you know what's negative or positive? That's what I was talking about with the Vedic astrology question. There's a mathematical way to figure it out. Basically, to give a really, really simplified example, you know, debilitation is a very simplified example of a negative condition, exaltation, very simplified example of a positive condition. So check your air signs, see if they have exalted or debilitated planets aspecting them or occupying them. It's not going to always work, but it's a simplified version that you could do real easy. And that's going to tell you why you hate Geminis. This third question is from a Scorpio. What is the general dynamic between Leo and Aquarius? Okay, well, Leo and Aquarius are on different... So on the opposite sides of the zodiac. When things are opposite, the symbolism is that each one has what the other one needs, even though neither one likes it. So for example, Leo is a fire sign, and Aquarius, despite sounding like it's aqua, is actually an air sign. So Leo is fire and Aquarius is air. Fire needs air, otherwise it goes out. And air needs fire, otherwise it won't move. Fire causes heat. Heat causes wind. The differentiation in temperatures causes wind. So if air doesn't move, it's not air anymore, symbolically speaking, because air is all about how things moving and creating sensations and going everywhere. So air needs fire. Fire needs air. So that's why they're opposite. Now, Leo represents personal strength. Aquarius represents service to society. So these two are opposite things, apparently, right? But actually, each one has what the other one needs. They need each other. If you just have personal strength, that's actually a vice. Unless you use it to benefit others, then it's a virtue. So personal strength requires service to others. But service to others also requires personal strength, because you can't be of service to others unless you have personal strength. Leo also represents the king or the government, and where Aquarius represents the common people, the masses. So again, the common people need the king, and the king or the government needs the common people, even though neither one really likes it. A government that doesn't benefit the people is just a vice. It's just evil. But a government that benefits the people is a virtue. And people, without a government, become criminals, unless they're extremely evolved. Otherwise, anarchy is a mess, to cite the Cro-Max. So there's another example. Government needs people. People need government. So that's an example of how opposites work in astrology. Each one has the thing that the other one needs, but neither one really likes it, but they can't help but being connected with each other. The next question. I have no planets in my 12th house, so how do I interpret my 12th house? First, look at the ruler of the house. Jupiter rules Pisces. So if your 12th house is Pisces, look at Jupiter. So let's say that your 12th lord is in the 11th house. The 12th house represents expenses, and the 11th house represents profits. So if the 12th lord is in the 11th house, it symbolizes expenses dwelling in profits. Now that's an abstract symbol, so how do you de-abstract it? How do you get something more concrete from that abstract symbol? You have to know whether or not Jupiter is in the positive condition or a negative condition. If the 12th lord is in the 11th house in a positive condition, then it means that your expenses always bring you profits. The way that you exert your energy tends to bring you joy. But if the 12th lord in the 11th house is in a negative condition, then the interpretation is you spend a lot of money on useless things, you chase happiness all over the place, and it doesn't really bring you anything. Another thing to consider, if there's a strong aspect to the cusp of the house, then the planet that's giving that aspect is almost as if it was in the house, and you could interpret accordingly. Okay, now Clover Sky 77 asks a question. They say Sun and Saturn both represent the father in a natal chart. What is that all about? The sun is the primary symbol of the father because the sun is the anchor of the whole solar system. And the father is supposed to be the anchor that gives support and stability and structure to the family. Saturn is mainly in the family a symbol of the elders. It's not mainly the symbol of the father. Mainly the sun is the symbol of the father. There are some Sanskrit texts that say, especially if a person is born after the sun is set, then Saturn should be considered to also represent the father. So you could take that into consideration. Saturn is like a father because Saturn also provides stability and structure, because that's what Saturn does. It limits things and it reduces things. So Saturn is like the father that sets rules and limits. Personally, I just stick with the sun. I just take the sun and then I blend it with other symbols of father. So for example, the 10th house for the father in a practical role, the 9th house for the father as a moral role model, and then the 12th harmonic division. So you take those things and you blend them with the sun, you have already more than enough information, in my opinion. Okay, here we go with the final question of the episode. Again, it's about Saturn. Is Saturn the laziest planet? Well, any planet can symbolize laziness if it's in a bad condition. If you have Mars in a bad condition, it symbolizes that you have no courage, you have no initiative, you have no ambition. So that's one way of getting laziness. If you have Mercury in a bad condition, it symbolizes never growing up. A person is young in a negative way. They never grow up. They never take responsibility. That's another way you can get laziness. And if you have Venus in a bad condition, it just means overindulgent, not liking to work. Jupiter in a bad condition means the person just expects everything to come to them by good luck. Saturn in a bad condition means the person is so negative and pessimistic about everything that they never really even start doing anything because they think everything is useless. There's many roads leading to Rome. There's many ways to be lazy. I probably know them all. But Saturn, by nature, actually is not lazy. Saturn is very tenacious. Saturn is very enduring, unstoppable. So Saturn actually intrinsically represents hard work, doing things that nobody else wants to do, and sticking to it. You know, it's only if Saturn is in a bad condition that it represents the kind of pessimism which makes you never want to start anything. So don't blame stuff on Saturn all the time. Saturn's my pal. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed our wondrous second episode. Click the little likes over there and share and tell grandma about it. And you can ask your questions for the next episode. You can ask in the comments. See you next time. Wait a minute. Don't forget to subscribe to my channel. How do you go?